Welcome to Entrepreneurial Insights, a podcast brought to you by the Society of Entrepreneurs and hosted by Pearson Crutcher and Jay Healy. The Society of Entrepreneurs is a membership organization founded to promote entrepreneurship and provide education and resources to Memphis business owners.
In this podcast, we'll have a series of interviews with accomplished business owners and entrepreneurs in Memphis, Tennessee. There are so many great entrepreneurs in Memphis, and their stories need to be told.
Welcome to Entrepreneurial Insights. Welcome to Entrepreneurial Insights. Our interview today is with Karen Blockman Carrier. I hope that you'll enjoy this conversation as much as we did, learning about how Karen's artistic background has helped her to create many vibrant restaurants here in our Memphis community. Karen, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Oh, thanks for asking me.
We're really excited. Why don't we just start it off with, are you a native Memphian?
Absolutely. Born and raised. Went to Grahamwood, White Station, the Memphis Academy of Arts before they changed the name. But they changed the name of every college here over the years. Very strange. And then left and went to Nashville first and then went to New York City and then came back. All good Southerners come home, don't
they? What did you do in New York City?
Actually, I went up there as a painter. I had a scholarship to go to Hunter as a painter and started and realized they didn't give me enough money to live and had to find a way to make a living. I had a really good friend, Sarah Jane Foster, who went to this cooking school up there. She worked for Martha Stewart. She got a job with Martha Stewart, ended up running her catering business. And Sarah Jane was a really close friend. She lived in Connecticut in Greenwich. And she goes, Karen, if you go to this cooking school, I'll get you a job with Martha when you get out. It was 6 weeks intensive, 6 days a week. It was great. Mm-hmm. So I did that before I started graduate school. And I loved it. I loved it.
Did you work for Martha?
I worked one day for Martha.
Do tell.
Sounds like a story there.
It was when she put out her first book, Entertaining, and went to the house in, I guess it was in Darien, Connecticut at the time. And she put me on grilling smelts. Now, if you've ever seen a smelt, it's smaller than a sardine. And these were catering grills, which have really big grates, so they kept falling in. And she was like, what is wrong? I go, I can't seem to keep them grilled. And they just really kept falling in the grate. So I said, why don't you move me to the smokehouse? And she did. And that was great because I got to smoke all the fish and smoke and drink beer. And I was happy. But that was the end of my catering business with Martha Stewart. But I came back to the city and actually started graduate school, but started working in some small little places in New York. And actually, the night I graduated from the cooking school, met a girl in the bathroom of the Lone Star Cafe. I'm sure you remember that place.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Back in the day. And she was in the bathroom and I smelled something and heard a great conversation, kicked the stall open, and she goes, I'm a caterer. I'm looking for some people. I went, wait a minute. I need a job. And I went to work for her the next day. And that was Susanna Trilling from Seasons of My Heart Catering. Now she has a cooking school in Oaxaca, Mexico, Seasons of My Heart, a store in Oaxaca, and a cookbook. And she had a show on PBS. So she was the darling of New York City. We opened restaurants all over the place. And then she moved to Perth for the America Cup. And the rest is history. I came home.
How many years did you work in the restaurant business in New York City?
9 years.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pretty much the whole time I was there.
Right.
Yeah. I dropped out of graduate school after 6 months. I really loved catering. We opened the Nile Wing in the Met, the Zackler Wing. We used to cater for the Zacklers. We catered Calvin Klein's 50th birthday, where he got flown in on a helicopter. Actually, with her, I saw a lot of the best of New York. Yeah, breakfast in bed for the head of GE on Fifth Avenue. Yeah, it was a trip. And then when she left, I started my own catering business, which was lunch catering, and we catered to the fashion photographers all over New York City.
And then what brought you back to Memphis?
A boy.
Always a boy. There's always a love interest.
Yeah, I had gone to New York City and met a guy from Memphis in New York City. And and then he decided to move back. And I didn't want to leave. I just opened Automatic Slims in the Village, which I still own. So I traveled back and forth for about a year. And then he asked me to get married, and I still traveled back and forth. And then we decided to get married on May 10th in 87, and I still traveled back and forth until I got pregnant. And then after 7 months, Northwest Airlines wouldn't let me fly anymore. I was like, really? They were like, yeah, Karen, you got to pick a city. I was like, okay.
And then at that point is when you started Automatic Slims in Memphis?
Yeah, well, actually, no. I came back and he owned, which is now the Molly Fontaine Lounge. He was living there. He had bought it from Ira Sachs Sr. And I moved in there and started the catering business. And I thought, well, I'll just start a little catering business. You know, how much business could there be? And it was shocking. And then we took it the back house, which is a carriage house behind Molly's, and zoned it commercial and started another roadside attraction catering. And then 6 months later, I started looking for space downtown. I wanted a restaurant where I could, people could walk. You know, I came from New York City. I wanted street traffic. And there wasn't any in East Memphis. And, you know, my family really wanted me to come to East Memphis. I was brought up out there. I was raised in the Jewish community, but I wanted to be downtown. And then finally, I found the space.
And then after Automatic Slims, is that when you opened the beauty shop? Was that the second one in the business?
Well, actually, no. The second one was Cielo, which we moved out of the house. So what we did was we moved out of the house where Molly's is, because I had two sons, and they were catering to the Mission. After everybody got out of the Mission in the morning, they'd come down the alley and my kids would take all the catering food and take it out there to feed all the homeless people. And that was really nice, but it messed up our catering business a whole lot. So we said, I said, we got to move. So we moved in 94. We bought a house in Chickasaw Gardens. And then I said, oh, let's, what are we going to do with this house? We're going to make it into a restaurant. I didn't want to sell it.
And Molly Fontaine's house is special. Can you describe
it? It was built in 1886. It was built as a wedding present for Molly Fontaine by Dr. Fontaine, who lived across the street.
Okay.
And it was actually given to her on Valentine's Day, which is really
just
cool.
A day or two behind.
Exactly. Yes. And it was built by Italian craftsmen. It's truly a house that you could never afford again. There's so many cities where those houses would just, you know, they're still standing as grandeur. But that street was called Millionaire's Row. And that's where all the cotton, big cotton guys lived. And up on the third floor, we call it the fourth floor peak, you could see out all over downtown. And all of those houses had those little windows. It was really cool. Yeah. You could actually see straight to the river. But yeah.
And so you turned that into a restaurant.
We turned it into Cielo, which was a fine dining sort of French Caribbean restaurant. And then I realized, you know, we had a lounge up on the second floor, and that was like really the busiest part after many years. And so I thought, you know, I don't really want to do white tablecloths. So that was just not my shtick at the time. And so I said, screw it, we're just going to make it into a lounge. And in 2007, but in 2002, so I opened Cielo in 1996. And it took us 2.5 years to get through Landmarks Commission. We were on the National Historical Register, but it was tough. You know, they didn't want us to tear anything down, which we didn't. We just removed some doors, but no walls. So as that was going on, I wanted to open something in Midtown. So Slim's was 1991. Then there was Cielo in 1996. And then there was Beauty Shop in 2002. And then there was a beauty shop general store next door. And then I closed that 6 months later in 2003, opened up Doe Sushi. But I switch a lot, you know?
Yeah.
Cielo became the Molly Fontaine Lounge in 2007. Doe Sushi became Bar DKDC in 2013. So I do this a lot. I just skip bored.
Well, I just know. I think it's just your creativity and everything that is so decorated so wonderfully with all of your artistic flair. I love all of them.
It's funny.
I know what Bar DKDC means, but would you explain that?
Yes. So when I turned 60, I felt like I could name something, anything I wanted. But everybody kept going, well, what are you going to call this music club? I go, I don't know. I don't care. And then I went, wait a minute. I'm going to call it DKDC. And it was hilarious.
Don't know, don't care. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Your restaurants are certainly very well known. And how many employees are you up to through all of them?
Through all of them. Well, you have to realize Molly's has not really reopened
since March
of 2020. It's a lounge, so the rooms are smaller and people gather. And it did concern me about that. So we've been doing a lot of private events there, a lot. Video shoots, photography shoots, rehearsal dinners, weddings, parties. And that's been great.
Yeah.
But people are clamoring for it to open. I mean, I get, emails on social media every day. Are you ever going to reopen? So most of those employees, except for one, came to the beauty shop. And roadside, the great thing during the pandemic, we cooked for the Ronald McDonald House because they get volunteers to cook for the families and their kids when they couldn't do it during the pandemic. So they called roadside. That really kept us going. And then we closed at the beauty shop that day and opened that night for to go. So altogether, I probably have about 60 full-time employees.
That's still a lot of
and they all came back. Mm-hmm. We had no problem.
That's great. How do you find and recruit? I know you've got Hedana with you for a long time.
Since 1989.
Wow.
New York City girl came to Memphis, yeah.
That's a good friend.
Yeah, big time. She's like my soul sister.
Yeah. So how do you find your best employees and how has that been during the pandemic?
Well, to be honest with you, we never lost anyone. So what happened, you had the PPP and we decided to pay. So what I did was called all the employees and I said, you know, if you come back, we will pay you exactly what you're getting with your supplement and your, you know, so they were getting almost $850 a week, right? The $600 and $250 or $275 for unemployment. So my thing was, we'll pay you that until the end of July or August when it was going to go away anyway. And they were like, we're down. So they all came back except for one person in the kitchen. And the waiters, most of them came back, but it was strange. I had people walking in looking for work. And I found some incredible new waiters that are just, they were young, but they're incredible. And, you know, I really run businesses as family. I don't know any other way to do it. Susanna taught me that in New York. Yes, we're a corporation, but we're not, you know, it's me and a family of, I call it the theater of the absurd because it is, you know, it's like the kitchen dance. You watch things. I used to stand on the stairs at Slim's long before I sold it because I sold it in 2008. And I would look out over the bar and over everybody moving and how everything flowed. Yeah. And we used to call it the kitchen dance. And everything, when it meshes, it's the most beautiful. It's like a ballet.
Yeah,
it's the
right.
most beautiful thing in the world. And it's the way it runs at the beauty shop. It is... It's just, I can't even explain it. But these people, I have dishwashers who have been with me 17 years. We're going to be 20 years old in June.
That's
crazy. We opened in 2002. We're going to be 20 years old.
That's amazing.
I have had really long-term, 17 year, 23 years. I have women from Vietnam and from Bangkok that have been with me for 25 years, from Slim's to the beauty shop. Roadside to the beauty shop.
So very impressive. Yeah.
It is. And the good thing is we had enough work to, so the reason I opened Hazel's Lucky Dice, the only reason I opened it, Hazel is my mother's name. And I was raised in a kosher Orthodox home. And my mother's still alive. She's 93. And she still keeps kosher. So I did a kosher style deli. I couldn't do a kosher deli. But the reason we opened it was because when we reopened in June of 2020, we opened for dinner and for brunch. We didn't open for lunch because no one was really back at work. They were all doing Zoom. And then my daytime crew who work lunch and brunch, all they had was 2 days. They had Saturday and Sunday for brunch and they were like, they couldn't sustain. So I said, I'm going to open this delicatessen. It was something I'd always wanted to do because it's pretty close to my heart. And so we opened for to-go and they all had, then they could all work full time. So that was the one reason I did it. But yeah, we haven't. Our kitchen staff has been the same. It's been beautiful.
That's so impressive to have that level of retention and engagement. If somebody else was starting a restaurant and said, how can I do this and get similar results, what would you tell them?
What I was taught by Susanna, you treat people the way you wanted to be treated. You pay them the way you hoped someone would pay you. You give them the insurance and the creativity and let them know that you got their back.
Yeah,
you're always there for them, whether they mess up. You know, we all mess up. We're all human. And I also was a pretty wild kid.
Mm-hmm.
I was in and out of a lot of trouble before I was 21. And to be honest with you, I had people always standing by me. I believe that it's the most important thing. Most of my staff will tell you I give people too many chances. They're like, Karen, enough already. Let them go. Oh, well... But, you know, and sometimes I do, and it's hard for me.
So was that an innate instinct, or was it something you kind of learned over time?
No, my father was a dentist, and he used to really honestly used to charge people $5. And if they couldn't pay, he goes, oh, just pay me $5 a month. And my mother would just like, what are you doing? And he was like, it's fine. They'll pay me, mm-hmm. you know. But that was the way I watched him. Mm-hmm. He worked 6 days a week till 9 o'clock at night. He played tennis on Sundays. It was crazy. Mm-hmm. But he loved what he did.
Yeah.
And he loved the people. And he would just, they would have their mouth open. They couldn't talk back, but he just talked. So yes, I have the ability to really talk a lot.
Seems like she loves what he does.
Right? She does love what she does. And that's great.
Did you always knew that you were going to own your own restaurant?
No, I never even really thought about it because I think it wasn't like I aspired to be in this business. I thought I was going to be, I went to New York to be a great painter.
Right.
I was going to make a stamp on New York City. And my aunt was a great painter, great artist, my mother's sister. They lived in New York City. Her best friend was Nina Simone. I grew up hanging out with them.
Wow.
You know, this is what I knew as a kid. And I would listen to her sing and my aunt paint and do charcoals and then I went to the Art Academy and met Dorothy Sturm. She was my mentor. She pretty much started the Art Academy, you know, when it was on Adams. She made a huge impression on my life, and I did a big book on her called Cobalt. And that's when I came back from New York, and Pitt Hyde and Ron Terry backed me in that book.
Oh.
And yeah, it was, they both owned a lot of her work, and they really believed in her. And it was a beautiful book. She passed before the book came out. So Marcus Orr had to actually do all the text. But we had a huge retrospective at University of Memphis. No, at Brooks for her, in conjunction with the book coming out. So my thing was, and she was huge in the 30s in New York. The 30s and 40s, she showed with Rothko and de Kooning at Betty Parsons Gallery. So my life prior to the restaurant world was very different.
Yeah.
You know? But I loved what happened in New York. And when I did decide I'm going to go into this, I went full force.
Yeah, yeah.
And so did I aspire to it? No. But then when I came back, I knew I was going to have a catering business. Uh-huh. And then I thought, well, you know, I've built up this great clientele. And I think it's time I can open a restaurant.
We need to eat every day.
Exactly.
That's right.
and we open Autumn Slims downtown.
Well, it's your so food is beautiful, too. So it's your artistic talent. It is. It really is. And I have to ask, do you still paint?
Actually, I haven't painted in a long time. I really haven't. But I do paint with food. And to me, it's a composition. And I tell people that my restaurants are really just paintings. And I think that's why I have to change every 6 or 7 years. It's the 6 year itch, not the 7 year itch. But I just, it's recreating something or moving something around or changing the interior or changing those menus, you know. And my background, if you think about it, is my mom's from London. My father's family was from Poland. My grandfather was from Amsterdam. I have tons of family in Israel. They're everywhere, South Africa, Australia. But my influences were, Susanna was Mexican. Jamaica, I've been going for 40-something years. Israel, New Orleans, New York City. So it's a melting culture.
Mm, yeah.
You know, I call it the cross culture. You know, it's very sun-drenched islands. It's the sun-drenched cuisines where you get that really big flavors. And I love that. I really love that. And that's how we opened Slim's. And I think that's why Slim's was such a hit, because there wasn't anything like it. And as far as, you know, people would come in and you'd see their head go 360 degrees because there was art, there was sculptural glass lighting. My husband was a lighting director, motion pictures. So there was all this stuff, you know, my best friend, who was a hat maker in New York, she did the bar stools. We called them bar stool hats. So, but over the years, we've kept doing that. We've just kept it going, you know.
Which makes it so much fun for the people.
Absolutely.
I mean, because you come in and you never know what it's going to be like.
Right.
And
you might have a burlesque dancer coming and taking off her clothes on a Saturday
and
night,
actually,
which happens.
That has happened to me. I went to Molly Fontaine on a tour. We went upstairs and we were doing one of the ghost tours. And right. We stopped for the drink and there was a burlesque show upstairs. It was great.
Right. It's really
my father was with me. He was curious. He kept sneaking away.
Exactly. So. Oh, my mother's birthday in July. I said, I have a surprise for you, Mom. So we brought her out. We brought Velveteen out. And she had done a 6-month residency, she lived in New York City at Molly's when we were open. And then, of course, 2020 came and she ended up moving to Memphis. Now she's doing this all over. But I brought her in for like 10 minutes and she came through the restaurant and did this whole, my mother, who like walks with a cane, she got up. I went, oh, so now you don't need your cane. Just amazed. And all the guys in the booths, they're like this. They're like halfway out the booths and their wives were pulling them back. It was hilarious. And within 5 or 10 minutes, she was gone. So you never know.
Oh, that's awesome.
You got to shake it up.
So is the book you wrote available?
Yeah, Cobalt. My husband did all the photography.
Uh-huh.
We only put out 300 copies. I still have about 40 left.
Okay.
But yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
That is a labor of love.
She was my mentor in many ways. She really
What's
was.
The single best advice that she gave you that you can, if there's, is there any one thing that's
Dorothy?
Really, uh-huh.
Yeah, keep your eye on the ball. Because I kept going, I really want to make a difference in New York City. And she was like, you can, Karen. You just have to really believe in yourself. She said, and don't let anybody stop you. But, you know, I sort of had that anyway. My mother was very strong and always made me believe I could do anything I wanted. Never really stopped me, except for dating non-Jewish guys, which I always did. It was a problem.
What advice would you give to somebody that came to you now and said, I'm thinking about starting a restaurant? What would you say to them?
I would say you have to really love people. Because if you're doing it for the money, you shouldn't get into this business. I really believe that. And I do believe you need to know the back of the house, the front of the house, the left, and the right. Because you should be able to go in there and wash dishes and not feel like you're above that. You should be able to wait on tables. You should be able to do any job there is. Any job. You know, before I left Memphis and moved to New York, after the Art Academy, I waited tables at the Bombay Bicycle Club, at the Spaghetti Warehouse when they first opened, God knows how many centuries ago. But I'm just saying there's just things you do. I waited tables at Zinni's before I moved to New York City. You do what you got to do. And I think everybody should have a job in the restaurant business once in their life.
Yeah.
It teaches you people skills. It teaches you how to be humble. And how to bite your tongue and know when to speak and not to speak. It's just, it's very important. And I do believe that if you don't love people and you're doing it for a monetary gain, then it's just, I mean, people do. They invest in restaurants all over the place and they do that. But if you're doing local and you really, that's just my advice. But I think it's a huge business right now. I really do. Look at Memphis over the last 15 years.
It is amazing.
Since I've come back, it's ridiculous. It's unbelievable. It's fantastic, really, you know? And I'm happy about it because it's just putting Memphis more on the map,
right?
You know?
As an entrepreneur, you always have to kind of keep learning and growing.
Absolutely.
And so what's it like to go to a restaurant with Karen? Are you looking at the menu and studying it and
Well, in other cities, yes.
Yes.
You know, in Memphis, I go to places, you know, I just want to go out and have dinner with a friend or whatever.
Right.
Sometimes I don't make a reservation under my name because I just sort of want to be unseen, so to speak, just because I'm not checking anybody out. I'm just having dinner. But in other cities, I go to experience and to learn and to grow and to get ideas. And I take those ideas and then work them into the way that my food would come out because that's, you know, when you can't travel, you have to learn from books or magazines. But when you travel, that's where your inspiration comes from. You know, it's really important. I go to Jamaica. I was there 3 weeks in January.
Yeah.
And I love that country. I love those people. But I really love their food. I love their food.
So do you have people down there that you've gotten to be friends with?
Oh, yeah.
Because I know you've been going the same place. Yeah.
They've known me since I was 17.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. They've seen me pregnant. They've seen me, you know, they knew my husband who passed, but they've known my kids since they were 2 months old. One of my kids speaks patois, and I go, what are they saying about me? You don't want to know, Mom. Right. But yeah, I definitely have Jamaican so-called family. Yeah.
Well, do you have any other big plans in the future for other?
Yeah.
Oh, any breaking news for us?
Well, I am going to, and I've been thinking about this a lot. I've been trying to find a way to open up, back up the Molly Fontaine Lounge. And so I'm thinking about doing the Molly Fontaine Supper Club. And actually, we're going to launch that soon. We're excited about that. I'm thinking, you know, I had Back Domi Yard. This is a crazy story. I started it in October of 2019 at the end. And I opened and had a huge party. There was like 300 people. It was outside behind the beauty shop. We showed movies and we had a rotisserie and we did, it was like my Jamaican little, little oasis.
Right.
There's thatch roofs back there. It's really beautiful. It's lush and all these plants. And then the weather got really bad in November of 2019. I was like, you know what? We'll just reopen in March of 2020. And then, we didn't. So we've been using that area as extra seating for the beauty shop. We have heaters in the igloos, air conditioners in the summer in the igloos, in the greenhouses. But now I'm thinking about moving that into DK 4 nights a week so we can bring back the movies and the food and stuff inside until we reopen in the summer.
Well, I think the igloos is such a great example of you and how you think so creatively, because the igloos were people could still during the pandemic because they'd stay in their bubble.
That's right.
So where did you get that idea?
Well, it's funny. I did not buy that for the pandemic. I had bought that for back to my yard, and I put them up, well, right after we opened when it got really cold and rainy. We put them up. A friend of mine in New York said, Karen, you should check this out. I just saw this on the top of this place on Fifth Avenue. And I looked online and went, oh my gosh, this is amazing. So I looked it up and I ordered them. They were nothing to put together. Mm-hmm. It was stupidly simple. And we riveted, we put them down onto the deck out back. And then it was just pouring rain and everything else was open. So I was like, okay, this isn't going to work. So I said, we'll just close until March. Well, here comes March. I have these igloos, and I was like, well, this is cool. We're just going to put heaters or air conditioners in them. And then the good thing was DKDC couldn't open because you had to be 18 feet away from a stage. We don't have a stage. it was the musicians had to be 6 feet apart. There's no way. So we used DK for the beauty shop for 6 foot seating, and we used the outback. And so in a way we had more seats than we usually had inside the beauty shop. So we just kept going once we reopened, you know.
It's fascinating because, I mean, everybody was impacted by the pandemic.
Absolutely.
But restaurants really took it on the chin.
Right.
But so many were so resilient and found ways to work around it. And you're giving a great example.
Quick.
Yeah.
You had to pivot really quick.
Mm-hmm.
And then, interestingly enough, I remember Jennifer Biggs calling me in October of 2020 going, well, what are you going to do about the winter? What are you going to do? And I went, oh, the winter. Because the pandemic was still going on.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, and then I saw these greenhouses online. And I was like, aha. And I measured. And the craziest thing was those five out front fit exactly between each door the way they were supposed to. It was almost like, I do believe in guardian angels.
That's right.
I really, really do. And so we put those up and we took them down in the summer and stored them in a storehouse. And we just put them back up and we got heaters in them and we're rolling on out.
So she makes all her success sound so easy.
Exactly.
But I'm curious, did you have any significant challenges over time?
Absolutely. Look, yes. The restaurant business comes with many challenges, you know. There's a lot of ups and downs, you know. Look, when we closed and opened up for to-go, there were nights we'd do $300 and I was like, I don't know if I can hold on.
Yeah,
sure. I don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
You know, and you think about four or five places and it was scary.
Mm-hmm.
The PPP came along, really helped.
Sure.
The second PPP came along, extremely helped.
Yeah.
The restaurant revitalization program came along. We got very lucky.
Yeah.
A lot of people didn't get it. We did.
Sure.
And more people need to get that because it made a huge difference in our world.
Yeah.
Huge. But there's many ups and downs. You know, we've lost a lot of employees who've passed away for some reason. We have. And it comes with a lot of tragic loss, a lot of love, a lot of fun times. But, you know, you just got to be there for all of it.
Yeah. What are some of the lessons that you've had to learn as a leader, as an entrepreneur?
How to really listen. How to really sit back and really listen. And not just listen to what they're saying, but what they're really trying to say.
Right.
It's different.
Yeah.
I really said I should have just put a sign on my door, restaurant psychiatrist. Because a lot of times, you know, and I think that's the beauty of, quote, the beauty shop or roadside or whatever, it's knowing how the people fit together. So you can hire somebody, and my peers in the kitchen will tell me, they're not going to work out. They got to go. So they pretty much know, and they go, oh, yeah, she's going to be great. So it's a personality thing. It's the way everybody meshes. And that's where the beauty of the kitchen dance comes in. Because when, and they become family, they hang out together. I mean, that it's crazy. It is crazy.
I learned so much from these conversations.
I do too. And I'm thinking that, you know, because every restaurant that you go to now, it says, you know, help wanted, and people just can't seem to find employees, but you've been able to keep them. Yeah. So I guess that family atmosphere.
Strong.
It is.
It's really strong.
It's a great culture. Another thing that you do as part of the culture is that you do give back in the community, and that y'all are very active. So can you talk some about that?
Yeah. You know, for many years, we gave to Hope House and then Ballet Memphis, the Art Academy. It's a lot of, you know, also nonprofit that we try to give to, because as a painter and stuff, you know, for years we did. I've been thinking about getting back to them because I know Dorothy's passed and Stephen's taken over, and it's awesome. It really is. But St. Jude, and, you know, we give to so many different places, you know, with Le Bonheur and giving and working with all the, you know, whatever they need for us to come in and do food and give away and stuff like that. It's important.
Well, one thing that Memphis has really changed, I think, in the food world. I mean, there seems to be so many more restaurants and a lot of things going on. What excites you the most about what's happening in Memphis?
All the young dudes. That's a great old song from Mop the Hoople. All the young dudes and dudettes that are coming up through the ranks. It's inspirational. And I think that it's really good for the city. And I think it's putting us on the map. And you want Memphis to be put on the map. Because look, barbecue, fried chicken, all of it, it's fantastic. Don't get me wrong. I eat it. But there's a lot more to Memphis than that. Oh, a whole bunch more than that. I'll tell you an interesting thing that's happening. On March 9th, I got a call from this film crew in Israel, and they're doing a thing called Jewish Food in America, and they're coming to Memphis.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is really interesting. But there's a huge Orthodox community in Memphis, but they're coming to Memphis, and they were interested in Hazel's Lucky Dice, which is so funny. I'm like, well, you know, it's not kosher. No, that's fine. But you can't show us any meat and milk together, because the Rudiman family who backs it, that was the one thing they asked for. But they're going all over. And the host is this actor from Israel, Ori, I don't know his last name, really big actor from Israel. Extremely handsome. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll do this. But it's really interesting that they picked Memphis. So you find all this stuff going on, you know, and it's good. It's really fun.
Well, what else besides the food industry excites you about Memphis? Anything?
Well, yeah, I think that creatives, I call the city of creatives. And a lot of people go, what do you mean? Well, it's always been bubbling right under the surface, but there's so many musicians and artists that are doing some amazing things now. And what's happening at Crosstown, and how they're doing, you know, all the people that they let come in and do a 6-month residency there. I think, you know, I'm bringing in a lot of new musicians to DK. There's just a lot of new people coming to Memphis. A lot of them are coming from Nashville. They can't afford it anymore. Coming from Austin, Texas. They can't afford it anymore. They're coming to Memphis. Yeah. And so what you have find is this great new group of musicians. And I have a friend who left Nashville about a year ago. He had a studio there, a recording studio, for 25 years. Couldn't afford it anymore. Came to Memphis on Vance, opened it up. He's blowing up, but he's bringing people from all over the world in there. So there's so much creativity going on here. It's really mind-boggling, and most people have no idea. What I would like to see is that the commercial news, you know, on your regular stations would quit talking about all the negativity in the city and start talking about the positive stuff in the city. I don't need to hear about every murder every 5 seconds that goes on. I just don't, and I don't want to, and I turn it off. But I think that they really miss what's going on, and they could build the city up a lot better if they would just focus on the positive. and the creatives.
You've talked about all the great musicians that you're bringing in and all the food that you have. How do you do it all? That's really what I want to know.
Somebody said, ask
me
that.
Do you sleep?
Yeah, I do. Somebody has asked me that. I've been asked that a lot. And I don't think about it. I think if I stopped to think about it, I would sort of be overwhelmed. But I don't really stop to think about it. I just keep doing it. I don't know anything else to do. I don't know. You know, my dad never wanted to retire, right? He had a heart attack. He had to retire. And within a year, he was passed. But I really believe that I've been shooting from the hip as a painter for a long time. You know, artists, it's what you do, right? And you're constantly thinking and looking and visualizing. And I think that it just keeps me going.
So one question we always ask, and I think you may have already answered it, but do you think that entrepreneurs are born or taught?
Good question. I think they're born.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're born.
Shoot from the hip, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah. I really do. And I think your family has a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
I think the way you were raised, I think, you know, my mom took us to New York and Memphis every summer and winter because her family lived up there and took me to all the plays and all the museums and all the galleries and just never stopped,
mm-hmm.
you know, and flew me to London and flew me to Israel. And I think the exposure makes you so aware of you're not just in this little bubble, you're really being exposed. And I think then you go, wow, I want to do that. I remember as a kid, I'll never forget this, driving in my grandfather's Cadillac. And we were going to Martha's Vineyard, and my grandfather was 4'11", and he couldn't see over the wheel, and he would be falling asleep in the Holland Tunnel. I'm like, Grandpa, wake up. You know, he's veering over. I'm like, oh, my God. And we came out, and I remember coming up next to this car, and there was this woman in there with this long, beautiful braid, and she looked to the right. She had, like, this beautiful makeup on this, and I was like, oh, one day I'm going to look just like that. You know, you were just this little kid at 8 years old, just mesmerized by everything you saw on the streets of New York mm-hmm. and what you saw in the windows and what you saw in the taxi cabs. And it's, you know, it is. It changes your life.
You know, I think that that's what makes Beauty Shop so special is that you don't feel like you're in Memphis and you come in and it's like all of these different things, all of your world travels brought in to share with people in the city. So we appreciate that.
I appreciate that. I appreciate you appreciating it. You know, yeah. You know, the interesting thing about the Beauty Shop, and I really believe that, is that sometimes people change the interiors of the restaurants constantly. It's stood the test of time. It's almost timeless,
yeah,
and I love that about it.
So for people who haven't been there, and that everybody should, how would you describe the interior?
Well, it was a 1940s beauty salon, and it's where Priscilla Presley used to get her beehives done.
Yeah.
And Elvis brought her here when she was 16 from Germany. It literally has everything left in it. It has terrazzo, original terrazzo floors. It has the original hair dryers that you sit in to eat.
Yeah.
The booths where you used to get your hair done are now booths that you can dine in.
So
everything's
creative.
Still there.
Yeah.
Everything, all we did, and we just, there was a drop ceiling and we took it out and lifted it. And basically, we left everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's cool.
It is. It's a really very, cool. very cool spot.
Yeah.
Do you think that Memphis had any role in the success of the business? Do
Absolutely.
You think it being here?
Yeah. Oh, yes. I think, you know, obviously the Priscilla, the Elvis dynamic was huge and still is, even on his birthday or on his death day or whatever, whenever they celebrate Elvis, which is, should be every day because he was pretty magnificent, I think, you know. But I do believe that, yeah, Memphis is, you know, I call it the funky river town. You know, and I say that with a lot of love because so much visual and artistic talent has come out of here from way back. I mean, I was brought up, you know, I'll tell you my age. I'm not as young as I look.
Well, you do look incredibly young.
But literally was brought up in, you know, the 60s here. And I was brought up going to every Goodwill review that James Brown you know, performed at. Stax was huge when I was brought up. And so, you know, we would sneak into Club Paradise, you know. We would go to Miss Ann's down in South Haven to get beer when we were like 15. But, you know, it was just a great time. It was great dances, great music. It was amazing what was going on here. And then, of course, Martin Luther King, that happened. And it definitely changed the city for quite some time. It did. It put a stop sort of on it. But I've always believed in Memphis. When I lived in New York City, people would literally almost roll out a red carpet. You're from where? Are you kidding? You grew up in the 60s. Did you hear this guy? Did you go to his concerts? I mean, they were just couldn't believe it that they met somebody who was from Memphis. I was like, what? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
And when I opened Slim's in New York, there were 9 guys and me. And most of them were just music buffs. So they were just in awe. They loved it. And they all came down to my wedding and they didn't want to leave.
Yeah. And you see that perspective outside of the U.S., right?
Absolutely. People all over Europe, yeah. Everywhere. Memphis carries a very strong, powerful image and name. And they know it. The music carried it very, very far.
That's very
true. Trust me.
Yeah.
And it always will.
And Memphis is also known for a lot of entrepreneurs. I mean,
absolutely.
We've got Fred Smith and Kimmins Wilson.
Absolutely.
And all of these businesses. Why do you think that that is?
It's the city of creatives. I believe it's the city of creatives. I really do. That you can have an idea shooting from the hip, and all of a sudden, you can make it happen.
I love how she kind of peers somebody like Fred Smith with James Brown.
There you go.
Why
City
not?
Of creatives, yes. Yeah.
Well, you know, why not? That's
get on the good foot.
Right.
That's like,
right,
exactly.
Might need to talk to the Convention Tourism Board to see if I'm changing our way we promote ourselves.
So. Hilarious.
Well, tell us a little bit about you personally. What do you do for fun? Well, it sounds like you work for fun.
Well, no, not necessarily. I do travel. I go to New York, New Orleans, to Oxford. I had a house in Taylor for 10 years. I used to have an art studio there and gave that up. But, you know, I have friends over. During the pandemic, it has changed a lot. But, you know, even in 2020, I was traveling to Jamaica before the vaccinations. I just triple masked and went, I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
But once you get into a country like that, to an island, you can breathe. You know, you sleep with all the doors open, all the windows, and you just breathe that sea. And so I felt safer there back then. And I was there in 21. I've been there 5 times since the pandemic. So, and I drive to New Orleans a lot. I have tons of friends. I cater down there a lot. I travel a lot. I have a son that's in Sonoma. I have a son that's in Brooklyn. So I move. I go. I try to go as much as I can because it brings me a lot of joy.
I'm curious, do you like to cook personally?
I do, but I have an electric stove that has one eye and the oven is 200 degrees off. So I know how to cook on it, but it's like the cobbler that has no shoes.
I
do need to get a new kitchen, which maybe will come in the next year or two. I do have a son who's an architect, so he's ready. It's pretty cute.
Cool.
Yeah.
It's great. It's just the cobblers.
Yeah, it is a problem. But I do cook. And everybody comes in for Thanksgiving and I cook. They're like, you're still cooking on this oven? Yes, I can make this work because I know exactly how to do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like to have people over and hang out outside. And, you know, now it's diminished to a certain group of people, you know, just because now I feel a little safer.
Yeah.
I think it's everybody's starting to lighten up a little bit, but as soon as we do that, some other lovely variant will come along.
Right.
But I feel like it's starting to slowly come back. You see a lot more people traveling. You see a lot, you know, Jamaica, usually when it was dead over the last 2 years, was really busy this past January.
That's such a good thing to hear.
It is.
It really is.
It is. And the airports were really packed, but, you know, it's okay. It's all right.
That's good.
Yeah.
What is something that people would be surprised to know about you?
Well, probably that I was a painter and I was never intended to go into this business. Let's see. That I was brought up in a kosher home, never ate bacon, shellfish, didn't know what any of it was till I moved out when I was 17. Literally. I mean...
Never even tried it.
Never had a cheeseburger till I was 17. Never mixed meat, milk. Never. No, none of it.
Mm.
So being in the field I'm in now, it is pretty crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is. But maybe that's why, well, I don't want to say it's why you appreciate it more.
But there's a lot of things I could tell you that I shouldn't tell you about myself because it's on a podcast. So we'll keep that confidential.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly right.
Yeah, so. I don't want to give away all those lovely secrets.
That's right. Yeah. But people would be looking for you.
Exactly.
So. Well, this was a great conversation, really.
It was fun.
Yeah. So much fun. This. It doesn't surprise me at all. Every time I see you, I just smile because there's always something creative coming.
Yeah,
so.
You got to keep it. You got to stay on that edge. If you rest on your laurels, you're finished.
Well, I do not think you're in any danger of that. So I will look forward to coming in and seeing what's new at Bar DKDC very soon.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks so much for doing this.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
A lot of fun.
Thank you.
All right.
If you'd like to learn more about Karen Blockman-Carriere and the restaurant she owns in Memphis, please check out our show notes.